Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2445. That's 2445. Tonight we're going to have a wonderful guest. Her name is Melora Vogel, and she is from Punta Gorda, Florida. She's a grandparent, and she's an advocate and a co-author with her husband, Dave, of Protecting Troy, Breaking the Chain of Child Abuse. Now, this is an international bestseller. Okay, this is a wonderful book that's been written, and it's here to help people who are grandparents maybe one of the grandchildren or many of the grandchildren, whatever, are being abused, and how they systematically actually went into the system, which is broken. We all know this. And I'm not going to say any more. I'm going to let, you know, her speak for herself. I do want to read a little bit more about what's here in the bio. And the number here, it's going to be a very interesting show. The number here is, 595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. If you want to call in and be a part of the panel, fine. And otherwise, you can just sit and listen. But this is going to be the type of show where we're going to learn things from. This is a learning show on Friday nights many times. And we have wonderful guests. Her husband was on a couple of weeks ago. I had the pleasure of running that show. It was a wonderful show. And he was on speaking about this subject matter, what we're going to be speaking about tonight. So we have Joe from Oregon. She's my co-host. I think she's the best. And we have our guests, and then there's myself. So give me a call, okay, if you want to speak on the panel. And it's an easy thing to do. If you can talk on the phone, you can talk on the show. It's really quite simple. And but right now I want to get to our guests. I usually read the mission statement. I might just read parts of it right now. We have a single purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional abuse, and neglect. Neglect is a biggie, okay? We educate the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts and showing child abuse to be a pandemic. We know that it's worldwide. And number two, we do offer hope and healing through numerous paths, and that's providing many services to adult survivors. Okay, many times up at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning talking to people on the phone on the night owl. And they have been abused, and they haven't spoken about it. And also people interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. All right, that's prevention, intervention, and recovery. That, too, is very important. And that's another thing that we try to teach people or talk to people about on this show. So tonight, I want to get to our guest. Okay, her name is Melora Vogel. And she is from Punta Gorda, I guess I'm saying that right, Florida. She is a grandparent. She is an advocate and a co-author, again, with her husband, Dave, Protecting Troy, Breaking the Chain of Child Abuse. And it is a shocking personal story about two caring grandparents who find themselves in the midst of a custody battle concerning their two-year-old grandson, Troy, from Georgia. Okay, I'm not going to read any more of this bio. What I want to do is I want her to, say a little bit about how she was brought up and also, too, a little bit about her family, and when they realized, actually, that there were problems with a grandchild and what was going on with that. And they have also created a system, I call it, it's called TROY, Technical Reporting of Youth Alert. Now, there's a lot of things that she's going to speak about, what she and her husband are involved in. They've been humanitarians for 20-some-odd years, and that's working with children at risk. So this is a very good guest to have tonight. And that we know that just from the stats, okay, that we hear every day anyway, that child abuse is going up horrifically, okay, because of the pandemic and because of the rioting out in the streets. How crazy is that, all that rioting out there? It does nothing. It does no good. And our children, for God's sake, are getting shot at now and everything. We know this. So she has, she and her husband have put together something that we're going to talk about tonight, and I want her to, speak about it. But I'm going to go to her talking points because she has some, and get started with that. First of all, welcome to the show. I'm glad you're here, Laura.
For having me on the show, and thank you too for having Dave on the show a couple of weeks ago. So we really appreciate the opportunity to be here with you all and share what we've experienced, and hopefully we can find others that might benefit from what we've learned and what we've gone through. That's kind of our point of doing all this. So
you're certainly the people to have on the show, I'll tell you that. I do want to just read out to these few stats here because that's important. People aren't aware of what the stats are a lot of times because we don't get updates. Okay, and that's really awful because people don't know what the heck, to believe or what not to believe. I understand that there's how many children that die a year from neglect?
Just under 2,000, actually, 1,770 children died from abuse and neglect in 2018, so not that long ago, and that's an estimation, of course, but and that's from the National Children's Alliance. These are real numbers of children that have died from abuse and neglect. So it is a real problem. It's nothing to be taken lightly. But people, as you said, don't talk about it, and it might be it's uncomfortable. And I know we're all busy, but it's something that affects all of us. It affects us in. Obviously, the death of a child is extremely sad and heartbreaking, but it's crippling to the people who it affects around them. And if you think about it, all of the abuse and all of the neglect of children around us affects us every day. Coworkers, people, our loved ones, people that we know have been affected, and they're impacted, and then that's going to bother, affect us as well. So it's not like it's just because it might be maybe in somebody else's door or household. It's still something that affects us personally because we can we all know somebody who's been affected, with child abuse or something that's happened in their past. So
right. And, of course, that's sexual, physical, mental, emotional, and neglect, okay? That's one thing that we cover on our show on NASCAR. We cover all the abuses. And, so that's very, very important that you get that number out, And then also, too, I noticed here, that was in 2018, yes, 1,770 children died from abuse and neglect. And then also, too, there's nearly 700,000 children are abused each year in the U.S. That number seems to fluctuate because we're told from the CDC, the Justice Department, the FBI, missing exploited children, child help, all the agencies that we deal with, these are the known cases. Okay.
Right, exactly.
So,
right.
Yeah. What's noise?
Reported.
Is that on your end or my end?
Let's see. I can try. Let me see. That might be on my end. Let's see if we've got, I might have one of those noise. David might be able to, David's here in the office too. We're just, we're working together today. Today it's me. David's behind me. So we'll see if this works.
Okay.
If it, does that help? Is that better?
I, it appears to be better, yeah, because it was like every few seconds there was a noise. So I think it's probably better, right?
Good.
And then
excellent.
also too, there's another statistic here that I want to get out because stats are very important in the sense that it gives people visuals. They think to themselves, my God, 92% of children who are abused are victimized by a parent. Now, does that cover all the abuses or does that cover the neglect? What does that cover, the 92%?
The 92%, it's, well, the majority, it's going to be either a parent, a caregiver, or someone who's taking care of the child. So they use parent, it could be a foster parent as well, but it's who the child is actually, who's the caregiver for the child. So 92% of children who are abused are victimized by their parent or their caregiver. And that seems like such a high number, but I guess it does make sense because, you know, it would have to happen with proximity, unfortunately. It's a tragedy. It's something David and I experienced. I don't know if the listeners listened to David in the last couple of weeks that show, but to explain the story to listeners who haven't heard it before. So we're grandparents. My husband and I are grandparents. David and I are grandparents of Troy. And he's actually just turned three. He's crossed that to the next year. But he was abused. He was severely neglected, and he's been abused by his mom. But we didn't really know that exactly. We had some hunches and early on. We wound up taking partial custody and also definite visitation of him. We have 25% visitation of his life with us, and we started doing that in part to help out our son, who is a soldier, or was a soldier. He's now out of the Army, and it was to help him out. And he and his then wife, they separated, and she moved to, he was stationed 1,200 miles away from her. She was stationed in South Georgia, or she moved to South Georgia, and he wasn't able to see his son, so very often, basically he's only seen him about maybe three times or so in a couple of years because of different things he's had to do for his career, but mostly in the Army. But anyway, so we decided to jump in and help. We thought it would be a good thing for the mom, the biological mom of our grandson as well. And overall, it seemed like it was a good thing. We started noticing lesions on our grandson when we pick him up that were really, you know, infected. We started lots of really runny noses, but noses are runny in children. So we thought, well, maybe that's, you know, maybe he's just getting over colds all the time. I don't know. But so we started a little bit making some, I wouldn't say excuses, but we started trying to be compassionate and saying, maybe this is just, you know, she's a young mom. She's a very young mom. So we just would take him to the doctor, and we would hear things like, well, the infected lesions are in impetigo. There was some discrepancy from her in the stories about if they came, where the lesions came from. At first, she told us he had been bitten by ants. And, I mean, we're talking, he had 50 or more lesions covering it from head to toe, I mean, in his scalp, in between his fingers. He couldn't close his fingers because he had so much inflammation. It was pretty bad. So, and then when we dropped him back off, the story changed. So we were questioning what she was saying to begin with. And, you know, we'd had some ideas that she wasn't always truthful with us anyway. So we just kept working with her. And our goal was to make our grandson's life we wanted to get him to adult and healthy, happy, and try as much as we can to, you know, to get him there. We were taking him for, at some points, we were taking him almost 40% of the time. So, and when we take him, I mean, we just take him. Like, you know, she's got the break and she doesn't have to pay for diapers and all the other stuff. So we were taking it on ourselves. Anyway, not this past February, but we've been in an ongoing battle, by the way, for 2 years. So this has been, it's been a lot. But February of 2019, we had just dropped him off, and we were talking to her about some small things, you know, diaper rash and stuff like that. And then we got home that night and thought everything was fine. Actually, it took about a week to find out. Maybe it was a few days. Anyway, we found out that he had been burned, severely burned, on 40% of his chest and stomach. And it was, we found out through, yes, it was, and it was a horrible burn. It was a second-degree burn. We're certain, because of the photograph, caused from hot liquid, probably water, but maybe some kind of other hot liquid. And we didn't find out about that right away. Neither did our son, his father. I think it was just through Wendy. That's our daughter-in-law. That's not her real name, of course. We protected her privacy. She's always going to be the mother of our grandson, and we respect that. That's just part of life. You know, she's family for the rest of our life. And so Wendy had been going back and forth with some dialogue with our son about other matters not related to the burn. The burn happened, and she was still talking to our son about a car and some other things. So that was kind of a shock to us when someone somewhere along, she posted on Facebook publicly that our grandson, a horrible picture of our grandson being burned. And so this process of this week after he'd been burned, right, we found out that she told everyone that he'd been burned by a babysitter, and which has turned out to not be a true story. But we didn't know that at the time because, again, she wasn't being truthful. So we went back and forth. We got the text message from our son saying something happened to Troy, and so we were trying to get to the bottom of it. He was too. We were working together, and then she told us this story, same thing she posted on publicly on Facebook. We don't check Facebook very much. I don't know if we're, I guess maybe because we're grandparents, and maybe grandparents aren't that cool, and we just don't do social media. I don't know, but we hadn't. So we texted her, and she texted us back a really horrible picture, and that picture had had associated with it some metadata, which is kind of the reason I say this. Is at first the picture is horrible and shocking. But we realized later through the metadata that her story wasn't truthful, and so that's how all this started to unfold. And it led us, it actually changed our lives. It's put us on a mission that will hopefully not only help to protect our grandson in the future, but hopefully protect all children, because our story is unique. I will give you that. We've got, in our story, it's a lot of levels, and it's, again, our book is Protecting Troy, Breaking the Chain of Child Abuse. It's a lot to talk about in our conversation tonight, but there are multiple layers of why our grandson will be it's going to be a challenge for us, and it includes some of it's police corruption, some of it has to do with the bias judge, some of it has to do with there's some things, the cyclical nature of child abuse, which it, apparently she has said that she was abused too as she was growing up. So it changed our lives in the sense that we are now fighting for everybody. We're fighting for all children, because no one should ever be treated the way Troy has been treated, and not as a child, not as an adult, not ever. So, and our goal is to change that and change the failures. We've seen failures in the mandatory reporting system, which I know we'll kind of get into the talking points. But anyway, so fast forward a little bit. Once we found out that the story of the burn wasn't true, this led us to and by the way, the babysitter was charged and falsely put in jail and was facing indictment up to 10 years in prison for a crime that she didn't do, right? And and this, and the big catch is, how could someone get away with this? Wendy is the daughter of the chief of police in the county where she resides. And there was a lot of favoritism going on there, and a lot of stuff. There were 17, maybe more, mandatory reporters that didn't report to CPS. And for any listeners, if you don't know what CPS is, Child Protective Services, it's labeled different things in different states. In Georgia, it's called DFACS. But they have different names, but it's all under the same umbrella of Child Protective Services. Child Protective Services sometimes has a bad name, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. The goal, my understanding, and I've learned a lot in this process, the goal of Child Protective Services is not to be the bad guy. It is to ask the tough questions. Sometimes they're really tough, and get help where it's needed. That's the goal. It's not. I honestly, in my heart, I do not believe that the states are trying to take children away. I really don't believe that. I think what they're trying to do is ask tough questions, and they're going to be uncomfortable, no doubt. But if there's not food in the house, hey, this is a program that we can show you. If you don't have health care, let me give you the number of maybe the health department, or what can we do? You know, it's so that the children are safe and they're healthy and they're thriving, and so we don't have the cycle of child abuse in the home. And as I said before, that definitely affects everyone in this country, no doubt. But it also it's expensive. Child abuse is expensive, and some people are like, well, I just go to work, I get up, my children, I mean, God bless you, I my children aren't abused, I get it. But it actually does, because if you think about children who, when they grow up, they have to deal with this pain, they have to, and it affects them. And look at the rates of people who, it affects everyone, and it's expensive. If people can only see it from dollars and cents. How much money do we call? I think it's $31,000, or maybe even more than that, as the average cost to incarcerate someone. And how many of those individuals were committing a crime because they're acting out because they didn't get the nurture that they needed when they were younger? They were abused, And that there's nothing. And by the way, right. David and I look at it from a compassionate standpoint. Mm-hmm. If someone's abused, they need help, even if they're an adult, we need to have an honest discussion about, from a compassionate standpoint, get counseling. Or if you want, what can we do as a group? We're all together in COVID. We're trying to solve all these different things. But why can't we start with the littlest ones, the ones that don't have a voice, like Troy? He wasn't talking when all this was going on. He couldn't tell us, Nana, I got burned because whatever, mommy, spilled something. He couldn't talk then. So he wasn't able to tell me. The picture told me, they say a picture's worth 1,000 words. The picture told me a lot, but Troy was too little, and those are the most vulnerable of all of our citizens in this country. And if we can't protect those, what are we doing, So, and this is a time where it seems like a lot of people are saying, we need to do something. And I think this is the right time to address, to talk about these uncomfortable subjects. So back to CPS. Oh, am I going in? Sorry.
That's okay. We have other guests, and I just got notation here. I'm not able to hear audio on computer. Anyone else? I can hear via phone. Well, I don't know what's going on with that, but I can certainly hear you, and I know that Joe can hear you. I do have two other people that have called in. And I want them quickly just to say hi, I just want them to know that I know that they're there. Hold on a second. Let me bring on Darlene from Tennessee. I want to see if she can hear us right. Darlene, can you hear us?
Loud and clear.
Aww. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Hello, Darlene.
I think it's a computer glitch or something. That's good. Then I also, too, I'll get back to you, Darlene. I'm going to start having our guests talk with talking points, and then we'll ask her questions. I'll go down the line, starting with Joe and then with you, and then also maybe two. I have a number here that looks like a Skype number. I'm not sure. Good evening. This is Carol Levine from the Stop Child Abuse Now show. Who am I speaking to? Hello, hello.
Got me?
Yeah. Who are you?
Yes, William down from Alabama.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
All right. Okay. You're the one that's the 111. Okay. Anyway, we have a guest on tonight. I don't know if you've heard how much you've heard, but she and her husband are grandparents of a child, their grandchild, who's being abused. They've gone to the court system. They're working with the court system. She was speaking about CPS. I happen to have a good CPS worker, but many times other people don't. And it's a very interesting story. This is a true story. She and her husband have written a book. It's an international book that is, what does it say here, Protecting Troy, International best-selling book, Protecting Troy, Breaking the Chains of Child Abuse. And, yes, it is a bestseller, absolutely, internationally, in 10 different places, I believe, or 6, whatever it was. Okay, now. Let me go back. I'd like to go back now that we have everybody's mic open. Joe is on mute right now. I don't know. Maybe she's trying to work with the computer. I don't know. But the point is we have the story here. And what I'd like to do, if it's okay with you, I would like to go to the talking points. I actually made notes because there's so much, so much to talk about here. And then also, too, at the very end, we'll talk about how you and your husband are co-founders of Kiss for Kids and also Kiss Candle. I think that's company, your motivational speakers. And then you have a website, evidently, www.protectingtroy.com, okay? That's protecting-troy.com. So we have so much to talk about. Let's start going to your talking points. And let's speak about that. Instead of speaking automatically, immediately about what you're doing today, I'd like to get out there to the public just a few things, okay? Not about the Troy Alert, but what is a mandatory reporter? Okay, a lot of people don't know what mandatory reporting is because, remember, we have people that have never heard this story before. So maybe you could explain that to them.
Okay, so I am a mandatory reporter. And so is David. We work with children. Anyone who is a professional. And now, okay. So I will say this. I've learned this because again, this has been a process. We are mandatory reporters. So we are required by law to report if we suspect child abuse or neglect to CPS or, like I said, in Georgia, the case of Georgia is called DFACS, but in Florida it's called CPS. So we have to report it. If we don't. I don't, to be honest with you, I can't understand why if someone sees something, why don't they say something? So from a ethical perspective, I mean, it's a child, for heaven's sakes. If you see something it's a child that's being abused, please do the right thing and report it, just because even if it's just, it's going to be okay, but the child, it's a child, but I am required to by law to report anything that I suspect, and there is a penalty if I were not to, and that would be in this case for every count of suspected child abuse or neglect. If it's discovered that I saw it and did nothing, it's a misdemeanor, and so there's a negative effect if for me to not do so. But okay, so my husband and I work with public education, and we also work with private schools too. We go in as contractors into schools, but that would be, anyone would be, I'm just going to use the OCCGA law here. Mandatory risks include faculty, teachers, administrators, counselors, social workers, psychologists, law enforcement personnel, a daycare, anyone in supervising or coaching or counseling or recreational programs. Also, judges and anyone, fire department, anyone in a professional capacity that works with a child is required by law to report when they see abused or neglected children. And in some states, don't quote me on this, but I think the state of Washington, every person that is that resides in the state, in that state, I believe, is a mandatory reporter. So there's a consequence for not reporting. That's what that is.
I know that down Florida at one time, and I don't know if this bill was actually passed, this should be something that's in effect in all of the states. If you see something, you make that phone call, and if you're a neighbor and you know that something's going on next door, I mean, you know, you can hear the screaming, the yelling, you can see the children, maybe they're being neglected, they're, you know, not well-dressed or whatever the case might be, maybe they're too skinny, they're just unkempt looking, or they have bruises, you know that they have bruises. For God's sake, you make that phone call, and if you don't, shame on you. And yes, there should be even a stiffer penalty for this. Okay, because like you said earlier, they don't have a voice, Melora. Okay, they don't have a voice, and they're waiting, they're hoping that people will make that phone call. You know, like help me. What can I do? I'm home and I'm being abused. It can be any one of those abuses that we spoke about earlier. Okay, then you have something else here, or it could be all combined. again, with the substance, the substance abuse, how does substance abuse cause child abuse and neglect? I know these answers. We on NASCA know these answers. But for the listening public who don't know these answers, okay, there's an alcoholic in the family. Let's say that. An abusive one. How does this affect a child?
So let's see. I think it's, and now I am not a psychologist, but so I'm not going to pretend to. But I know that there's a nurturing, and these are. It's again, this is psychology. I know there's nurturing that takes place when a child bonds with a parent or a caregiver. There's nurturing that takes place. If there is a breach in that, in other words, at a younger age, I think before the age of five, I guess that's where the nature and the nurturing thing takes, you know, where everyone's bonding at that point. That's a big time for a child to learn trust and a lot of other skills, social skills. And if what they're learning instead of trusting the person is that person's going to hurt me, that affects them the rest of their life, and they're going to always be trying to catch up to it and figure out why they behave a certain way or why they feel a certain way. And why they can't trust, and a lot of other things going on, and it's heartbreak. I mean, just to say that, it makes me, it makes me want to cry because it shouldn't be that way. You should feel like if there's any place you can feel safe, it should be when you're a child. You should be able to feel that way. And you know what? And the other thing is, I'm gonna say this from a compassionate standpoint. Alcoholism is a disease. Okay, so if I see the compassion there too. No one should ever abuse or neglect a child, but they both need help. Both the parent that's dealing with something and the child. But here's the problem: the child has to have a place to be where they can get the care that they need. While mom, dad, parent, guardian, somebody, while they're getting the help that they need, until they can come together. And that's kind of is one of our questions. I got kind of off on a little bit of a substance abuse.
Well, that's okay, because what you're saying, Melora, is quite true. Okay, a lot of us come from alcoholic backgrounds. Okay, and many times, more often than not, our children do suffer. They suffer horribly because they see many times what goes with that is domestic violence. Okay. And domestic violence is, whether a child is hit or not, just watching it is trauma, okay?
Right.
And then they're always thinking to themselves, my God, am I going to be next, okay? And it's as simple as that. So that's abuse in itself. Now we have a panel here. We have Bill who's listening, and Bill is our CEO, and I'm going to bring him on. He can say hello. I'll say hello, Bill.
Hi, Carol. Thanks so much, Melora. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We appreciate it. I know you have a lot to offer on this topic, and it's a really important topic to NASCA. So we think it's great that you're coming and talking about these issues.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate
that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, we do have a panel, and I'm going to introduce them again. We have Joe from Oregon. She's my co-host tonight. I'm bringing her on now so she can say hello and maybe ask a question, because we have covered some things. So go ahead. Go ahead, Joe. Your mic is open.
Thank you. Thank you, Carol. Hi, Melora. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for being on the show. I listened to the one with Dave on there, and I appreciate you providing the additional information. I'm very interested in hearing about this thing that you've developed, the Troy something. And also, I wanted to mention that another thing that alcoholic parents do is they have such different behavior and such quick changes in behavior that a child is, you know, becomes hyper aware and tries to see which mommy this is or which daddy this is. So it's traumatic all the way through. So thank you for being here, and I'm learning a lot, and I'm looking forward to more. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it. So do you want me to, I can tell you a little bit about the Troy Alert, or if you, is this the right time?
Well, not
okay.
Quite.
I can wait.
Let me explain something. We have a panel here, okay? And so we have Darlene from Tennessee, and we have William from Alabama, and we have a 609 area code, which I will get to in a second. But right now, let me have Darlene be able to say hello. Go ahead, Darlene.
Hello. I just got through reading the sample of your book. Now I went ahead and bought it, you know, because I already read all of it.
well, thank you.
I was thinking, like, I wish I had somebody in my life back then who would have stood up for me like that, you know? And that's just thinking all while I was doing that, because I was abused basically since I was born. So I appreciate you looking out for your grandson. That's a lot of to be admired there. What makes me wonder is how she treated the other son, Teddy.
So, yeah. So I've seen her hit him. So, and I did talk to her about it. And that kind of made things uncomfortable, as a matter of fact, because I don't believe in hitting a child in the face as a form of punishment. And so we had strong discussion about that. But, you have a great point, Darlene. That's another thing that made David and I say we've got to change this. We started off thinking more like an isolated thing, and you're right. It's not just if somebody's abusing something, they're probably abusing other things. And you're right. That's exactly what was happening. And you shouldn't have been abused either. And there's somebody, this needs to be, light needs to be shown on this. This needs to be something we address. We should all come together and address this as a nation, I think. I mean, I feel like this is the right time, and I'm really sorry that you were abused as a child, Darlene. Really sorry to hear that.
Yeah, and I noticed that she had the job of being an emergency 911 operator, too. And
yes.
For her to do this, and she was an emergency 911 operator?
Yes.
I'm like, this is crazy, you know? And her mom was chief of police or something like that?
Yes. So there's lots of layers of, and we're still, I mean, it's expensive, but that's not, it's more heartbreaking, honestly. We're fighting a big battle. We are little, we're the little guy. We're literally the underdog. But you know what? We know that we're right. And we're not, we've been comfortable, and we could be, you know, we're not traditional grandparents. I assume that I wish this were unique, but I hope that all grandparents have grandchildren that are not being abused and neglected. I really hope that. But,
for
those of us that are, this is, you know, this is our fight, and we're the little guy in this for sure, and we're fighting an uphill battle, and actually it goes all the way up to the judge, honestly. So we're in it, but we're not going to just sit around and be comfortable, because we can't sleep at night thinking about that we're not doing something to stop this. So that's why I know it sounds weird, but we just can't let it go. So
well, you know that his life is in danger and in jeopardy as long as she's around any kid, you know.
Exactly.
That's right, so, darling. Mhm. That's right. so often is the fact that when children have abusive parents like that because of alcohol, drugs, whatever, their lives are in jeopardy. And also, too, what Joe had said earlier with the behavioral, that's very true. I worked in detention center, and a lot of those kids, most of them, came from dysfunctional homes, and a lot of times there were alcohol and drugs that were involved with that, and they ended up having behavioral problems. Now, I want to go down to, thank you, Darlene, thank you. We have William here. William hasn't had a chance to say hello yet. Go ahead, William, go ahead. William, you there? Okay. I don't know, he's quiet right now. Let's go down to Linda from New Jersey. Okay, Linda. Glad you're on the show.
Hi, Carol.
Hi. Why don't you say hello to Melora? Yeah, Melora Vogel.
Melora,
hello, Linda.
I read your bio, and I said I just have to listen in and hear more about this because I just became a grandmother, and I'm an advocate, and I just want to hear your story. So I look forward to hearing it.
Thank you, Linda. I appreciate that. I'm really glad you called. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that, Linda. Okay, so let's get back to, you have the talking points. I went ahead and I looked at the press release. I have a press release. People have, they usually have press releases, and it gives so much information. So I'm going to take from it now and ask you some questions here so that we can learn, okay? Number one, we can start talking. Well, we've already covered what can anyone do to protect their loved ones when they suspect they are being abused. That's a good question. Let's go to that first, and then we will go to with the Troy mission that you have there. What can people do? If you have a child or a grandchild, a niece, nephew, someone in your family that you know is being abused, what can you do?
So it's and this is kind of the process we went through, and like I said, this is ongoing. Our book is live. I mean, we're in the middle of the battle. We're in the trenches right now. But address it. If you suspect abuse, if you're thinking there's neglect, you know, even if it's the kids aren't eating, your grandchildren, you know, you're like, oh, come on, do what you can, bring food, do those things, because you know what, maybe that changes it. Maybe mom that's single, she's struggling. We've all been at different places in our life. You know, maybe she's a little short that month for something. Help out where you can and address it. But address it. Don't just pretend it's not there. If you feel it, you can pretty much guarantee if you feel that there's something happening, you're probably right. And and the truth is, grandmas, we've been around a little bit. So, you know, I'm not saying yeah, exactly. You learned when you were a child, you raised children, and now you're doing it again. We know, I'm not saying we're perfect. That's not what I'm trying. I'm just saying you kind of can feel. So if you see something, address it, you know, be in a compassionate way, but address it. And then if that's not getting anywhere, like I said, I addressed the hitting poor Teddy in the face. I addressed that, and that didn't go over very well, but I tried to do it as kindly as I could. Then go, you know, sometimes you might have to just, be patient and work. If you get to the point where you're like, nothing's changing. This is an interesting thing I learned throughout this whole process. Open records. I think 2012, Obama actually put it in place, and I was actually quite pleased. So you can go through open records. You can go to, let's say you think something's happening, go to the county where your grandchildren reside and do an open record search for police reports or 911 calls, which are also extremely evidentiary. It's interesting when you read a police report, it's on paper, it's interesting. Yes, you'll find out facts about things that you're surprised about. I was shocked how much we learned. In fact, the whole book that we wrote was based on evidence. There's not one thing in there that wasn't based on, which has made it a painstakingly difficult book to write, because not only were we hurting, but everything we had in there was actual evidence, from the 911 calls to the police reports to the fire incident reports to public Facebook postings from Wendy, who seems to be have one of her best friends it appears to be social media. So she, I can't believe it, but she posts these things. And so we were like, well, what? So we have all this evidence. So go to Open Records, find out what you can that way. Use addresses. They're going to go by the parameters you give them. Because what's that saying? Garbage in, garbage out. So if you are thinking there's something wrong, I would bet you're not the only one. I bet the neighbors are calling too. Just like Carol was saying, that neighbor's probably seen, hey, you know, those kids come and go, and they sure act scared when I say hi to them, why did she have a big gash on her head? And hey, they don't really look like they grow very often. You know, I mean, you know what I'm saying? I bet you somebody's saying something. I'm not saying that that's happening, you know, but it's possible. Go to Open Records, see what you can find out. And then once you have evidence, then you can actually take it to – you can report before that. Or if you're just kind of like, I don't know, find out. Do the research. Report. Then the next thing, really report. Report it to your local CPS, whatever the name of that is. You can report at any point. But honestly, CPS, they do look at evidence, obviously, as more believable than somebody's hunch. So that's just how it works. And you can, I guess we can all identify with. And then if they're not doing anything, and that's unfortunately, and if you read my book, David and my book, unfortunately, our CPS failed us, sadly, really sadly. And like I said, I don't believe that this is how it is everywhere, but I know that it happened that way with us. And that was, it's been heartbreaking. But anyway, so call your legislators, which is what we did. We actually incorporated the governor of the state of Georgia. So Brian Kemp was involved, his actual assistant. We actually have communication with her, and she's been involved. And then if that doesn't work, then join an organization. And that's what we're doing right now, because you know what, we all live in this country, and I'm just as much of a citizen in the United States as the police, chief of police, as a judge, and you know what, I bet you even Donald Trump would say that just as much as he is. So we're all in this together, and I love my country, but there are some things that need to be fixed, you know, and so this is our time to do that. So join an organization, I think SCAN is a great organization. I think just the more we do, the more we talk about the problems and shine light on them, the more they can be changed to benefit, and especially the children, the ones that can't talk.
Okay. Well, I couldn't agree more with you, you know, because there are so many problems with child abuse in this country. A lot of it's not really being addressed right now because of the issues, all the riots and all the things that are going on. And then, of course, with the pandemic, I mean, there's just so many things. And again, like I had mentioned a little bit earlier, then we're going to go to what you and your husband have put together, the system. We're all dying to hear about that. But right now, you know, all the stats have gone up. Kids are home. Their abusers many times are home. And so the stats in that with sexual, emotional, physical, mental neglect, all the abuses that we speak about on this show have gone up. And they've even spoken about that on TV. They're recognizing that, so people are reporting. However, not enough people are reporting. And then, two, we need the people out there who go and investigate. We certainly don't need for them to lose their jobs, and we don't need for the police to lose their jobs, for God's sake. You know, enough's enough. But, okay, now, let's get back. Let's start talking about what you and your husband have put together, the protectingtroy.com. I have it written down, but tell us about what you're doing.
So one of the things we're mandatory reporters. So both my husband and I, once we the burn was just, this is it. We're going in. You know, we are reporters, but we were like, there's no way. She's definitely abusing Troy. We know she is. This is a fact. You know, we've got the evidence right now. We are going for this. So it was a 45-minute wait on hold for me the first time I called CPS. And once I finally got a hold of an anonymous agent, I started to tell my story, only to be disconnected. And it was an anonymous person, and it's just a general number. So I had to dial the number up, and guess what? It was another 55-minute wait this time, though. And I was like, this is insane. Why is it this hard? And it wasn't just me. My husband had the same experience. And we have learned since then. So basically, to get through, it was a big commitment to sit on hold, to get through, to talk to these anonymous CPA agents who wouldn't give us any. They would just say uh-huh, and they would write down whatever they write down. They would listen to our story. We asked them, can we email you the evidence? Because we knew that we knew where our grandson had been burned, or approximately. The picture told us the time. There's something in a picture called metadata. Wendy, my grandson's mother, texted us the photograph that she had of his burn when it was still fresh, which is great. I don't think she realized that. I don't know why, and it's fine with me because we were able to figure this out. I don't think she realized that we would just be able to use an app on our phone that tells XF data or metadata for this picture. So we were able to see when the picture was taken, where it was taken, the exact place it was taken, actually. And from the way that the burn looks from medical professionals, we were able to tell it was a fresh burn made by hot liquid, about the approximate time that it happened, and even where he was laying when she took the photograph. And then the other weird thing about our photograph, if you read the book, it's crazy. It's literally a crazy story. There was a person's thumb in the photograph holding up his shirt, not her thumb. We know that for a lot of reasons. And it wound up being the chief of police. So the chief of police had taken a picture of my grandson. We got all this information. So this information, so back on, you got to read the book. There's too much to go into it at this point. So we had evidence,
okay.
And we tried to give it to the CPS agent, and she said she would think, or she would call us if she needed any more information. We never received the call. Meanwhile, nobody had reported it. We were the only ones who had reported this burn. Not the chief of police, not the 911 dispatcher, no, not the fire EMTs that came to see the burn that supposedly they saw, not the EMS that came the night that the police were called, not the police that came and wrote the police report about our grandson's burn. Nobody called CPS except for us. And we got the runaround, and we were on hold, and we called multiple times, and they wouldn't take in our evidence. And this is the silliest thing ever, especially like right now with COVID. You can literally order food. With all this going on, you can order food and have it delivered to your house. They have services now, apps. You can get an app for anything. You can literally get an app to have somebody that you don't know come bring you food that they pick up at Hardee's and drop it off your door right now because of COVID. But we don't have an app to be able to upload a real-time photograph of a video of something of a child being abused that we happen to see if we're in a parking lot. Or why do we not have an app or some easy way to communicate something that's real-time so that a poor child who has no voice can't get help? And so David and I are like, this is – and I've my background, my major is information systems, so mm-hmm. – So I just was like, you know what, what we've been working on is developing this app so that people can just use it on their smartphones, tablets, or PCs. It can be used anywhere, anytime, and you can upload this information, and it's stored. And this is the other thing that was a problem. We have a couple different states. We live in Florida, and again, Wendy and Mike Troy live in Georgia. So states do not share information, child abuse information right now. I have no idea why that is. I know I love the Amber Alert, and I know everybody can appreciate that one. It's such a blessing to children who are being abducted. It's literally saved lives. Literally, it saved lives. They made that, instead of a state-to-state thing, they made the Amber Alert a nationwide thing. For child predators, they made it nationwide. But why is it that abuse, child abuse and neglect is still maintained, the databases are maintained by the individual states? That doesn't make sense. There's a case in Orlando of a little boy, a 10-year-old. I don't know if we told you about this one last time when David was on the show. There was a 10-year-old little boy in Orlando who was being abused by his dad. They were circus promoters or something. His dad and his stepmom, his dad had custody of him, and his stepmom had him here in Orlando in Florida. And they were going to promote, they were going all throughout the United States, they were promoting the circus, and they wound up in Indiana at a motel. And they had been abusing this little boy, And Orlando was catching up with them. I mean, they had the information on him. But Indiana didn't have any information about this little boy's abuse. Well, the little boy was chained to a bathtub, and he died. He died of starving to death. Right, right. So why are we not maintaining it as a national database? That doesn't make any sense. So David and I are like, that's what we're working on. There are ways to make it a national. You can maintain the national data. And I forget the organization. I've already been working on it right now. But you can maintain it in a national database. If you can do it for the other systems, there's no reason why it can't be maintained across the U.S. It doesn't have to be state to state so that they can track if something happened. And that poor boy, I mean, we were his voice. You know, we were his voice, we failed. We failed because we haven't done anything to make this one system. We need to. We need to have it where dad can't just go wherever he wants to or whomever. I mean, whoever's abusing a child can go wherever they want, and it's maintained separately. We have to do some differences. So national database, make it an app, make it easy, and make it so that people can, and when they see something, they can say something. And those are the changes to Troy Alert, and it's Troy-Alert. And if you Troy-Alert.com, we're like I said, we're at the beginning stages of that for funding and everything. Like I said, we're a little bit more grassroots, and we are the small guy, but we're not the small guy in the sense that, you know, we're old, we're grandparents, you know, so we can, you know, we're fighters. We're not backing down. We're not going to let this happen. That 10-year-old little boy, I think about him and I think there's no way I'm going to just back down. There's no way, especially in our line of work. And we have seen abuse, you know, you're in schools, you see it. You do. We can't keep doing this. So that's, in general, that's the Troy Alert. How, you know, specifics about the detail of how the app works is great. If you want to sit down and have a little geek talk with me, we can do that at another point, I'm sure.
Well, that would be wonderful. You see, that is the problem, though. There's several different problems. We've spoken about this at times on our show. So many times, like the first time offenders, and they're supposed to have, they have to go and their probation officer comes to see them, or if they do serve time, their parole officer. But so often, they do skip. They go from here, yes. They go to there, they go from here, they go from there, and they fall through the cracks. It's very hard many times keeping track of these people. I don't even want to call them people. They're monsters. I call them monsters, okay? People who abuse children, whether sexually, physically, mentally, emotionally, neglect, whatever. They're monsters. And with the first-time offenders, I do speak about this once in a while. First-time offenders have offended up to 124 to 128 times, and that could be 10 times with one kid, 5 times with another, on and on it goes. You do the math. And they get small sentencing. They get small sentencing.
Yeah.
If they're caught.
Yeah.
If they're caught. And it's problems like that. So, and then, of course, you know, they don't do their whole full time, okay? I was kidnapped and raped, and the guy did. I was one of 14, and quite frankly, he only got 3 years imprisonment. That's it. And he didn't do 3 years. He was probably out in a year and a half. They say a third to a half of the time is what they do. And then they end up skipping and then going on their merry way and doing the things that they know best, which is being a monster to children.
Right.
So each state should be in touch with another state. But as long as a person, you know, can get out on their own and skip like that, then it's a very hard thing to do. But I totally agree with you. We need to fix the system. We can't do it. I can't do it. People like you, maybe you can do it. You have the knowledge. You have the expertise. I do not. I just know what happens. And we do
and
speak
the thing
about
is- And Carol, you know, the thing is, like I said, and our book kind of opens with, we never thought, my husband and I, we grew up, we both came from families. Actually, it's funny because our moms could have been sisters, how much they are alike, you know, but we both came from families that, no abuse, but, you know, loving, but not necessarily always wealthy, but not poor. You know, we're literally just a little bit vanilla, but, you know, we grew up with good background. But we, you know, and but again, our in our career, we see things. So we were, you know, we realize that, you know, maybe we're, it's not always that way. We get that. You know, we lived comfortably, and I would say not bad, but I feel like maybe my eyes, like the light shone on it. Like it was just like you that should have never happened to you, Carol. That shouldn't happen to anybody. And but if you just sit back and you just don't do anything, you know, it's, we all get comfortable and I put Netflix on and stuff like that. And you don't, no one needs to walk around feeling guilty, but just do what you can, you know, do something, you know, and if everybody does that, I think it will change. I think people will think twice. I think there's a reason why, and you know, there's a reason why they're, and actually, I'm not to plug any other country. I love the United States, but I'm saying there's a reason why in other countries there's a little bit less of these types of crimes. And it could be because, hey, they feel like they're going to get caught. I'm just saying, maybe if we all pool together and we work on this, people feel like they're going to get caught. No one, you know, there'll be less, and maybe not ever does anyone ever have to be abused or anything, you know, child or otherwise. So that's our, sorry, I'll get off my platform.
Well, I think also, too, that the sentencing should be stiffer, okay?
Yes.
It should absolutely be stronger sentencing there because we have so much corruption, you know, in our Justice Department. We know this. And a lot of times monies go flying by. And, you know, the person sometimes even can get off scot-free. And that's just not right. It's not fair. We have a corrupt system. We live in a corrupt world. And as long as we have this corruption around us, it's very hard for any of us who are good people, or maybe who have turned into good people. I was a wild child, but I'm good, you know, and I have a good heart, and I'm out there helping people all the time. But, you know, the point is this. As long as we have so much corruption in our system, then it makes things difficult because we've been speaking about, you know, we've spoken about the CODIS, we've spoken about all different kinds of organizations on this show. And what you're doing is amazing. I tell you to keep working at it. Keep thinking, I don't want to say this, but in an inappropriate way, but keep, yes, thinking we should all think about that little 10-year-old boy that you just described. There are many 10-year-old boys. There are many 10-year-old girls that are going through things of similar circumstances where people don't have a voice for them. That's why your death rate is so high, okay? It's a terrible, horrific thing. Society has to change. Society has to change the way that that they think. They have to take it more seriously. They live in their comfortable little homes or whatever, and they think, well, this isn't going to happen to my child, but it can happen to anyone's child. It doesn't matter whether they're rich, they're poor. I was rich. You have no idea from where I've come from. And I had all the abuses. And quite frankly, I didn't have anyone to have a voice for me. And there's a lot of me's out there. I'm not unique. None of us are unique. These are the things that happen in life. And we have to get our priorities in order. We have to get them in line. We have to get them together. And because, as Bill says, our children are our future.
Yes.
And they are. So the reason why we have so many kids in detention center a lot of times is, yes, they come from homes where they're terribly dysfunctional. A lot of my friends end up there. We were dysfunctional. We were out in the streets. Look, well, this is something that needs to be worked on. And it's a wonderful thing that you're doing. I'm going to go to the panel, and please don't ever, you know, get tired. I know you're a grandparent. I'm a grandparent too. Hey, I'm even a great grandparent. Okay.
Carol, I'm going to tell you one thing. My first marathon I ever ran, I was 50, or just before my 50th birthday, I ran it, and then I ran another one. So yes, I am old. That is true. I am, no doubt. But I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of fight in me, but there's a lot of fight in everyone. And wow, I read a really good book. I need to plug it because I did read a really good book. Next time I'll get you that info. She said, you know, whenever you think that you don't have anything left in you, You've got 40% more you can give. So, and I need it. You know, I hate quoting her and not giving her props, but I just read a good book, and so anyway, and she's right. As soon as when I'm out there running and I'm like, and I'm sitting on my head whining, I'm like at mile 16 going, you know, I do. I have more in me. I can do it. Yeah, and we're all,
can.
And the truth is, everyone is. It's not just me. I'm not just them.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's certainly a lot more of us, okay, that can, okay, absolutely. Let me go to the panel now, because I'm sure they're busting by now. Joe, go ahead. Do you have a question or a comment you'd like to make?
Yes, yes, indeedy. Melora, I would like to contact you after this, because I have been working on a redesign of the child welfare system at the national level, using Oregon as the pilot, and I would like to incorporate your ideas into what I'm doing.
Nice.
Because when you called, you actually did not talk to a CPS worker. You talked to a screener who they can just screen out at the call and not follow up, and so a CPS worker never sees those. And sometimes it's up to half of the calls are screened out, even if they're from mandatory reporters. So I would like to talk with you about that. So I've got your website, and I'm going to send you an email, and let's see what we can do together.
Great, thank you. If you do Facebook, we also have our Facebook. It's protecting-Troy.
Okay.
So while I do, I was a computer programmer. Again, social media.
So was
I'm
I.
old, so okay. There you go.
So was I.
Nice. Okay, so Protecting Troy is our Facebook page. So protecting-Troy. Sorry. So we, you know, mm-hmm. if you can follow us, I guess, or I don't know
mm-hmm.
if you follow or like
yep.
us, but anyway, on Facebook, mm-hmm. That's another way to get in touch. But, and you can also, troy-alert.com and protecting-troy.com. Those are two other websites that are websites.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, please stay in touch. Thank you. What a blessing.
Yeah,
see
you're
what
welcome.
Happens when,
yeah,
you know,
that's,
when light is shining.
That's why I was so excited to hear. Because it sounded like you were developing something that is going to be very critical to this redesign that I'm coming up with. So, cool. All right. Thank you.
Nice. Thank you. Thank you.
No, I think
that's
wonderful. Wherever the help comes from is a wonderful thing, because we all have the same desire, and that is, of course, to, I always say, put a dent, okay, in the statistics of child abuse. We can't stop it, but we can certainly slow it way down. And we have a lot of things standing in our way. But you guys put your heads together, and maybe you can come up with something. I'm getting excited now. Okay. let's go down to Darlene here and see if she has a question or a comment she'd like to make.
Hello. Sorry, it's really affecting bad. It's not your fault or nothing like that, but it just... You know, I'm not able to talk at the moment. It's really just...
That's all right, sweetheart. Don't worry about it. I hear you. If you need to call me later, you can, all right? I'm not going anywhere tonight.
Yeah, well, like, I got some records in Florida that I've been trying to get, and I'm having a large battle trying to get them, you know, about my life, what they got hidden and everything. And this is
mm-hmm.
hitting pretty close to home, you know?
Okay. Well, I'll talk to you later if you need, okay? Okay. We'll put you on hold and let you rest. Okay. Let's go down to William here. William, do you have a question or a comment you'd like to make?
Yeah, there's what she mentioned about the difference between the state and the individual states. There's
mm-hmm.
a reason for that with the state sovereignty of the courts and the federal courts, because the federal jurisdiction in that, when you cross state lines, it goes into federal law. And see, I know a little something about it because I'm actually a legal assistant. So, but
mm-hmm.
the lawyers could explain more to that.
Okay.
So that's where you have some of the problems, because each state have its has its sovereign set of statutes. And that's the difference. And then you have the federal statutes and things that are further. So a lot of times, in order to get the state courts and things to do that, you have to go and get the federal statutes changed so that the states will comply with the federal statutes, because the federal law is superior to the state law, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, actually, thank you. I'm actually writing down what you're saying. So, yeah, that's interesting. So, thank you. I will. So basically, the federal might have to make the state say you have to. Do you know anything about how I have a little bit of knowledge, but not much about the beginnings of Amber Alert. I don't remember. I don't know. Of course, that's a lot of detail.
It was named after Amber, the gal that went missing.
Right. Right. And see, that's missing persons.
Missing persons, the FBI comes into jurisdictional authority.
Yep.
So that's where that goes, was when missing person cases and things like that is actually, it starts with the local and then the county, state, and things like that, but eventually it's under the FBI's jurisdiction in missing persons.
So maybe because it's under the FBI, it was easier to get the laws passed to make that happen, maybe, I'm guessing.
Yeah, well, you have to go through the legislature to change the law. Legislature
are
the people who change the law. That's your senators and congressmen.
I have no problem with talking to them, but we got to start somewhere. So,
where you start, because that's where the laws start. Or at least to get the law changed, that's where it starts.
Right.
In the House, because that's why you have the HR bills and the SB bills. That's the different proposals by the Senate and the House.
Well,
that's enough about the political government situation.
I just have one thing to say about that.
Yeah, go ahead.
The federal has taken on the child welfare and is directing states to do things. The states have to agree, but the federal is taking over on this, and the states do have to agree. So just wanted you to know that.
There is a federal level, too, called Family Protection Service that is actually a federal agency.
Mm-hmm.
Many people are not familiar with that one yet.
Yeah.
I wonder how long they've been. I've been doing some research. I think it's the Children's Bureau. Would that fall under that? That's the federal side. It's the National Children's Bureau.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's the Children's Bureau, but it's also the Family First Act that was just passed in June, I think, and also a follow-up to that. So there are national acts that have passed that provide funding to the states if they play nice with the feds. So there's some monetary incentive, which is what they need, to get the states to go along. I've been doing lots of research, so mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so thank you.
You are definitely contacting me after this, right?
Absolutely. I can guarantee it. And see, this, if everyone works together, we will have, you know, things that we can offer. And if we all work together, then that's how we can make that dent, okay, in the statistics. But, you know, as far as with the states, if they can't come together with one thing, everything should be, you know, a federal level that's for murder and that's for kidnapping, if I'm right on that, okay? It should be for sexual abuse, too, all right? It should be more than that. It should expand out. And the states have to all agree, and they all have to work together. It's like each one is its own little country. You know what I'm saying? They each have their own laws. And as long as they each have their own laws, that can be a brick wall. You know, that's why you have to keep working and working and working through it. But you guys, I'm sure you can do it. Okay, that's good. All right, thank you. Thank you, Joe and William, okay? I'm going to get down to Bill here. Bill, do you have a comment or a question you'd like to ask?
I appreciate both Joe and William, you know, chiming in to help this cause because, you know, it's important to me. We used to do a whole series of these shows, as you know, Carol, and we haven't done them in a while. But we felt it was so important that we did them monthly anyway. And we did them for quite a long time. If people are interested in looking up that series, they can go to NASCA.org/Jill because the gal's name who did the shows with me was Jill Jones Soderman, Dr. Jill Jones Soderman. And there are dozens and dozens of shows there. And it's possible that there will be some information amongst those shows, even in the descriptions of the shows, that could help Milana or anybody, again, with some direction here, like Joe and William are giving her. So there's a plethora of information out there. It is more or less a matter of us getting enough impetus and agreement to, you know, to work on the issue. Because we used to call that show, the issue institutional abuse and enabling.
Institutional abuse,
that's what we used to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it included CPS and foster care, but also sometimes medical, you know, care and certainly family courts, sometimes police departments and so forth. Institutional abuse and enabling, though, is just a catch-all phrase. And you might like something that you find there. So again, NASCA.org/Jill will get you that whole group of shows. So anyway, thanks very much, guys, for your positive input, Joe and William and Melora, for, of course, everything you and Dave are doing.
Thank you. I wrote down. I'm going to go check it out once we get finished here. I'll be sitting down drinking coffee tomorrow listening. Thank you.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what Bill says is quite right. We have a phenomenal, I've had a lot of people tell me this website. I'm very proud of our website, okay? And for people out there who are just listening to the show, that's www.nasca.org. And if you scroll down to the red blocks, there's a wealth of information. In each one, they have different titles inside of each one of the red blocks. And you can find all different kinds of information. And it certainly pertains to what we're speaking about tonight, and it also, you know, speaks a lot about child abuse, how to spot it, how to work with children, what to say, what not to say, family issues. There's just so much that it covers. So when I do go out and I do speak, I take right off of the website, you know, and I have hundreds of papers now because I've made hundreds of copies, so I don't have to do too much more of that. But the point is this. Yeah, we do have a very good website. So people out there who are listening for the first time, if you haven't listened to us before, go to our website, and you will find a lot of information that way too. Now, shows like this I consider to be educational. I love education. Now I do. Didn't when I was a kid, but I love it now. And the point is, you know, we learn until we're no longer here. And if we can help, by God, that's what we should be doing. Okay. Now we have a good idea of you know what you're doing here, and you've made two good contacts here that you can get a hold of. Let me go down to Linda. Is she still here? Is she just, I don't know. All of a sudden, I think she dropped off. I don't see her down here. Okay, whatever. I want to talk to you also about you're a co-founder of Kiss for Kids, you and your husband both.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about being a co-founder of that organization. What exactly does that entail?
So it's what we do is we help raise money for not-for-profit organizations in public schools, but mostly public schools, sometimes private schools. It could be for traveling sports teams, but it could also be for if students don't have instruments, they can't play in band. So we help raise money for that and of course, repair instruments and anything that has to do with keeping children plugged into a something, be it I think AVID's a really good program here because it encourages children to go to college. So it takes money, though, because they have to, a lot of the schools that we work with are, like I said, public, but they're even you know, maybe their Title I or and whatnot. So this might be the first opportunity that they really have to go out and tour a college campus. So they need that, but they don't have the money to do that even. So we help raise money for those ventures, and it could be. I mean, Relay for Life. We've done a few of that. So of course that's helping with breast cancer awareness and so we just basically whatever we do, it's always a cause, a noble one, almost always. There's never been a time where it's just not. But half of the proceeds go to these programs. So, and then we try to stick with only things that are made in the U.S., and we've always been that way because we have a lot of good products in the U.S., and why shouldn't we? And I would say a lot of people right now with COVID-19 are probably wondering, scratching their head, going, hey, what's the deal with China? No, I'm just kidding. Sorry. But seriously, we do. We have a lot of good products here. So we've always tried to find products that are here in the U.S. And then that's the other thing. We have Kiss Candle Company. We have Kiss Candle Co. They're soy candles. So they give back to the American farmer. So that's been a sort of our thing. And I know I'm a daughter of the daughter of American Revolution. So my mom is a DA. So basically I know that there's some things that need to be changed, and I'm not trying to, you know, criticize, but, and so that's what I'm working on is changing. But I do seriously, love the country that we live in. So I'm working hard to promote and keep us buying things here. So for 20 years, we've been doing that for actually over 20 years. My husband's been in it longer than I have. And weird how we got into it. It's just my husband worked for Kraft Food for years, and he was manager of, basically Ruby Tuesdays. We came into this industry in a strange way, but I guess that's how most people have careers. They kind of just fall into them, and next thing you know, you're doing something. And you're like, wow, I never would have planned that when I was, in first grade, thinking about what I wanted to do when I grow up.
Yeah, right.
That's
right.
That's what we've been doing.
Well, it's really a pleasure to have you on the show. You and your husband both. You're so knowledgeable, and you have so much enthusiasm. Of course, you have your grandson to worry about, but we have. Not just your grandson. We have to worry about all children, and I can see just from the way you speak that you do worry about all children, and that's a wonderful thing right there. See, that's what we need is for society to care enough about kids, to get involved and to have a watchful eye, to watch children. And for God's sake, if you do see something, you can call Child Help too. That's 1-800-4-A-CHILD. That too is an organization. We've had them on the show a couple of times, and I called them at 2:00 in the morning. I wanted to see if they were for real, and a counselor did come to the phone. Oh, yes, she did, and I made like I was a person that needed help. I'm a really good little actress, so I told her all kinds of things, and then I told her who I really was, and she laughed. And I ended up, we had her on the show twice now. 1-800-4-A-CHILD has been on our show. And there is sort of like a hotline service, but they also can direct you in the right directions. And people out there, if you don't want to deal with your local people because you're afraid of retaliation, because there's so many times I've heard that retaliation, which is quite real, okay? You can call the 1-800-4-A-CHILD number, and they, of course, you stay anonymous. You don't have to give your name or anything, and you tell them where you're sort of like located, where the problem is. They will send people in your area to go and investigate. And if you have an organization calling another organization, you tend to get more attention more quickly. Okay, let's put it that way. If you're just a person off the street, you see something, and yes, they should be more responsive. They should do their jobs. I agree with you. But you're going to get more information, and you're going to get more, attention that's needed for the problem if one organization calls another. So I've told people quite a few times to call 1-800-4-A-CHILD and let them make the phone calls, because that way that's another organization that's involved in, you see. That's how it's beneficial. So Anyway, we're getting down to the top of the hour here. We only have approximately 3 or 4 minutes. And I'm going to leave you with the last 3 minutes. My clock is always wrong on my computer. Joe, how many minutes do we have left?
Five.
We have 5 minutes? Okay. What would you say? What would you say to people out there who are listening, and what kind of hope can you leave us? You know, what would you like to say to the people and leave us with some hope? Go ahead. The floor is yours.
Well, I'll kind of cover the you want to say with hope. I was going to say I found 5 things that kind of were the reason why child abuse continues, and they literally are applicable to our story. There are commonalities, and there is every story of abuse is unique, but there are commonalities. The commonalities we want to change are these 5 messages, and then I'm going to leave you. Child abuse is cyclical. Substance abuse around children leads to child neglect of and the abuse of children. Child abuse and child neglect continues when it's unreported. Mandatory reporting systems of child abuse are antiquated, and if we understand that health issues, mental health issues are a problem, but you need to, if you feel like you need to seek treatment, please, especially if you're a caregiver of children, seek treatment. But this is what I would say to all the grandparents out there and anyone that has a family member that they love: do not quit. Always be there. Be supportive. Don't quit. I'm not, you know, my husband and I, we're sometimes, you know, sometimes it's scary. You know, we are literally going against, we are the small guy. We are the little guy going against the big guy. And we realize that. But doing the right thing, what's that saying? Do the right thing, do your best, or, you know, let's see, how does that go? Do the right thing, do your best. And treat others as you would like to be treated. And if you follow that, you're going to probably wind up being in the best place, and you'll probably have people behind you. And if you have people behind you, it's just like you were saying with 1-800-4-A-CHILD, then then you're not so little anymore, and you're not the little guy against the big guy. Just don't quit. We're not quitting, and I hope that everybody else will feel that way and hopefully join us. Like I said, I really don't. I want to change something. We want to change something, and it feels like that's the atmosphere. It feels like everybody that I've talked to tonight it feels the same way, and that gives me hope.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. And that's what we need to, you know, tell people. But we need solutions. This is what we need. We used to say this on the shows that we had in the past also. It's good to speak about something, but if we don't have a solution, then it's like almost, I'm not going to say empty words, but it's like words that don't go anywhere. So because if people do start to, you know, gather together and start thinking, when this world calms down, for God's sake, whatever it does, people, you know, our children are being abused right now as we're speaking. They're being abused right this second. Many, all over the world, not just the United States, but all over the place. Child abuse is not something that's new. But what we have found is you have children who need psychiatrists. They need psychologists. They need. They end up in trouble. They go to detention center. And if they don't get help there along the way, and I work there, they don't get much help. Trust me. It's more just housing them. And then the courts decide what to do with them, put them in foster care or whatever. You know, or if they continue to not get the help for their behavioral issues, then yes, they end up in prison. What a wasted life. Look at what I just said. And if we as a people don't come together and start wanting better for our children, then it's just going to continue to grow. So, but there is hope. We have shows like this, and we have people who do care, and we're all going to fight like hell. That's it. Okay, I have just been told in my ear that I have like 32 seconds or something, whatever. So I want to thank you so much for coming on. Please keep us, you know, and come on anytime you want, you know, as a panelist, or you can come on as a guest. Keep us apprised of what you're doing. Let us know what's going on. And you have two people. Go ahead.
was going to say one thing. We might be the little guy, but I want to tell you, we are international bestsellers. Our book was internationally a bestseller about 2 weeks ago. We sold enough books in six different countries and 10 different categories. We are not lawyers, and our book beat out all the law books in our categories. And so we might be the little guy, but if you ever feel like you're the little guy, understand that we just stood up for something that was wrong, and we are international bestsellers now.
There
so don't
go.
Be afraid to stand up.
That's right. And I don't think you're a little guy. I think you're a big guy, okay? We love people like you who are out there fighting. And so that's great. And we're fighting, too. We're fighting all the time. So thank you so much for being on this show. Go ahead.
Thank you, Carola. I said Troy's worth it, honestly. It's not just Troy. It's every Troy is an acronym for every abused child. Troy is worth it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being here. And keep in touch, okay? Let us know what's going on. And you can come on as a panelist if you want, okay, anytime, okay? Okay.
Thank you, Carol.
Well, thank you. Yeah. So, everyone, please stay safe out there. Stay in your homes. I hate saying that. Go out as little as possible. Do what you have to do.
Perfect,
and, let's do a lot of praying, okay? I believe in prayer. I think we need that. And so we had a wonderful show tonight, and we're going to have another show again on Monday night. Monday will be another person will come on and they'll tell this story. So thank you again, Melora, and say hello to your husband for us, and we'll see you soon. Okay?
All right, Carol.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
All right, bye.
Okay. Good night, everybody, and thank you so much.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was-